Good afternoon. I'm going to call this meeting of the Taxes Committee to order. I will note that we have a quorum present. We're not going to take roll call right now. So welcome. It feels I was just like noting that I've been a committee chair for the last couple of years, but I've never chaired a committee in a room. So this is like a new experience for me. But it feels good to be back in room five and with the Tax Committee. I think the last time that we had a meeting in here was probably in February of 2020, maybe early March. We had a meeting or two, but it's good to be back. So welcome. Tax Committee, I have to note first, is the best committee in the legislature. So it's really important to get that out of the way. This Tax Committee is where so many parts of our state government come together, and I just feel immensely privileged to be here in this spot and to be ready to do some really good work for the people with you all. So today, a little unorthodox that we're meeting today, the day after we gaveled in the session. So usually we would kind of like, you know, we have a lot of a few new members on our committee. We would let you guys like figure out where your offices are and stuff before we had you jump right into a complicated tax bill. But this year, we're just diving in. We have sort of a timing issue on our hands, and that's why we're moving swiftly on federal tax conformity today. So, you know, a lot of us, I use probably like TurboTax or something to do my taxes because they're very simple. And like, you know, Representative Davids probably has an accountant, but, you know, I can use it's that thick. Mine's a one page. So I use TurboTax, but we need our Department of Revenue to have time to tell TurboTax what to put on the forms. We need to kind of like, you know, if we're going to make changes for this tax year, which we are doing in this bill, then we really have to move it quickly. So I just want to apologize, you know, kind of for that, because I think the way I would like to do things is we get to know each other a little bit. We kind of like go through some overviews. We get to know our staff. We develop a little bit of a shared base of knowledge before we would jump into the meat of our committee. But I just appreciate, you know, the flexibility of everybody, all the members and all of the staff to help us move quickly on the bill that's in front of us today. So we're probably just going to, you know, do this one thing, this one tax conformity bill. But to start with, we're going to do a quick round of intros. We'll do this more completely next week with our entire kind of tax team from partisan and nonpartisan research and you know, all the members. But if we could just go around, say your name, say your district, and maybe if how long you've served in the legislature or if you're a new member. And I'll start. My name is Aisha Gomez. I'm the chair of the Tax Committee. I represent the South Side of Minneapolis, and I was first elected in 2018, so I'm going into my third term. And I'll pass it to my left.
Sure. My name is Patrick McQuillan, and I'm the committee administrator for the Taxes Committee, and I've worked for the House since 2019.
And thank you, Chair Gomez. I'm Greg Davids, representing District 26B. I border Iowa and Wisconsin, so tax issues are very important down in that part of the state as they are across the state. But before we go on, Chair Gomez, I just want to thank you so much for calling this meeting today. There's a long tradition. There's history here with Chair Lincheski, with myself, with Chair Marquardt. We want to get this done as soon as we can on the issues we can agree on. We need to get it done. We make Minnesotans' lives better. We make the Department of Revenue, we make their lives better. We make everybody's lives better by doing this and getting it out and getting it signed into law so that the department can adjust what they need to do. So I'm very happy that we're doing this today, and I'm going to avoid the question on how long I've been here.
Thank you. It's great to be back in the Tax Committee. I did my first 4 years in the legislature. I was here under Chair Davids. And so I appreciate the opportunity to be back here, and I've served in the legislature for 8 years. John Kosnick.
Thanks, Patty Anderson. I'm a freshman in the legislature. I'm Northwestern Washington County. So.
I'm Bjorn Olson. I was elected in 2020, so I represent District 22A. This will be my third in-person committee meeting, so thank you for that.
My name is Mike Wiener. My district is 5B, and I've been a legislator for about 25 hours now.
Jim Joy, I represent 4B, which is Clay County, Becker County. I'm a freshman this year and small business owner, so I'm excited to be on this committee, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Jeff Witte, 57B, Lakeville, and I'm with Mike. He had the hours down. I'd have to take my shoes off, so thank you for that.
I'm Kristen Robbins. I'm happy to be back in the tax committee. I entered with Chair Gomez in 2018, and I represent Western Hennepin County.
Hi, Chris Wozenski, House District 15A. I was just elected to that new district this year, but was elected to a couple others prior to that. I was first elected in 2010, and appreciate the opportunity to serve on tax committees. Looking forward to doing things that help business and help communities and help individuals here in our state.
I'm Kelly Canavati. I am the House GOP researcher, and I've been here on and off about 5 years.
Hi, I'm Sean Haydorn. I'm DFL Research, and I've been here since 2019.
Hi, everybody. My name is Rep. Liz Lee. I represent District 67A in St. Paul's East Side.
Hi there. My name is Representative Mike Howard. I represent District 51A, which is Richfield and a sliver of South Minneapolis. I'm beginning my third term.
Representative Steve Elkins, I represent the western half of Bloomington, District 50B, and this is my third term and first time on this committee.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Joachim, 46B, Olive Hopkins, sections of St. Louis Park, and a chunk of Edina, and got elected in 2014 with Representative Kosnick and Representative Pinto.
Hi, everyone. Representative Esther Agbaje, representing parts of downtown Minneapolis and North Minneapolis. It's entering my second term, and like Representative Olson, I think this is my second in-person committee here. So thank you, Chair Gomez.
Representative Andy Smith, I represent 25B, which is downtown Rochester and the surrounding areas. I am a first-termer, so this is my second committee meeting, so I'm a veteran.
Liz Olson, District 8A, which is about half of Duluth, and I am starting my fourth term.
Representative Jeff Brand, representing parts of Lewis County, Lesueur County, and all of Nicollet County, District 18A. This is my second term.
And Dave Pinto, the southwest part of St. Paul, the opposite corner of St. Paul from Representative Lee. And I was on property taxes my first term, and I'm really excited to be on full taxes this term under Chair Gomez. Thanks.
Dave Lislegard from the Iron Range, third term.
Matt Norris, I've got the privilege of vice-chairing this committee. I represent 32B, which is the southern two-thirds of Blaine and Lexington. I've had the opportunity to be an advocate before this committee for a number of years, and now looking forward to being a member of it.
I'm Lauren Sabis. I'm the committee legislative assistant, and this is my first year.
All right. Thank you, everybody. So what is tax conformity anyway? We're going to find out. Presently, I'm going to turn it over to our presenters at the table.
Chair Gomez and members, I'm Sean Williams from the House Research Department. We're a nonpartisan office that staffs the tax committee, so we do some bill drafting, amendment drafting. We'll do bill summaries for the committee every week. We can also help you with research questions and some income tax and other property tax modeling. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what income tax conformity is and why this bill would make sense to do this year. So it's sort of a high-level starting point for this conversation. Minnesota's tax system is based upon the federal tax system. So our individual income tax starts with adjusted gross income, which is the definition of income in the federal tax code as its starting point. Our corporate franchise tax starts with federal taxable income, but this diagram sort of shows you that our income tax system sort of breaks away in many ways from the federal income tax system after the calculation of adjusted gross income. We have separate rates, brackets, credits, and other deductions and additions. But sort of at a high level, the federal code is our starting point.
Thank you.
So as a result of that starting point, federal laws and rules that affect adjusted gross income for individuals or federal taxable income for corporations would also affect Minnesota liability. Many rules for calculating business income also affect adjusted gross income. The changes in federal rules when Congress changes the federal tax code, those changes are not automatically adopted for Minnesota purposes. Minnesota is what's called a static conformity state, which means that our tax code is connected to the federal tax code as it is amended through a certain date and time. So our tax code is connected to the federal tax code as it was amended through December 31st, 2018. We've adopted a few other select provisions since then, but for the most part, our tax code is connected to that point in time. And so in other states that have what's called rolling conformity, when Congress changes the federal tax code, those changes would automatically apply to their state. But in Minnesota, the legislature has to proactively adopt any changes made by Congress. And the way that we've historically done this is by updating the state in law. So since that date, and since the last time the legislature updated the Internal Revenue Code date in law, a number of federal acts have passed. I don't think I'm going to read through these individually because I think we all, it's not very helpful. But you can see that there's several of these. There's also one act that actually passed last week, the Setting Every Community Up for Retirement or Secure 2.0 Act, that was also enacted. That last act is not being adopted or addressed in this year's bill, but it sort of shows you that there's been a lot of changes federally that we haven't quite responded to as a state yet. So this bill, House fiscal staff are going to go through some of the individual line items of what particular provisions cost. We're going to talk a little bit about the language of the bill in a moment, but I just wanted to highlight some of the sort of significant conformity items that are included in this bill. So one category is non-taxation and also deductibility related to certain COVID business aid programs. So some of these programs include the Shuttered Venue Operator Grant Program, there's SBA Loan Assistance, Restaurant Revitalization, and EIDL Advances. These were all kind of pandemic response programs for businesses that the state has not sort of adopted the federal treatment, which is excluding some of that those grants from gross income and then also allowing associated expenses to be deducted. There's also a number of COVID-era kind of financial assistance programs for individuals that would be adopted under this bill. So there's an exclusion from gross income for certain student loan forgiveness programs. There is dependent care assistance. So this is dependent care flexible spending accounts. There's increases allowed in the amount you can contribute to those accounts for 1 year. And there's changes in our state working family credit that have to do with how the federal earned income credit changed as a result of or under the pandemic. There's also increases in the charitable contribution itemized deduction. Some of these deductions relate, or the changes relate to limitations on that deduction. So there's limitations based on how much of your income you can deduct as charitable contributions. And I think Congress sort of tried to increase charitable giving during the pandemic. And so they lifted some of those limitations. And then they also separately allowed what's called an above-the-line charitable contribution deduction, which meant that people who itemize their taxes could still deduct a portion of their charitable contributions. So this bill would also adopt many of those changes. There's also a number of what kind of get referred to as business extender provisions. These are provisions in the tax code that are usually extended by COVID on a year. Excuse me, extended by Congress on a year-to-year basis. So a lot of them relate to depreciation schedules for certain kinds of property. These business extenders were extended in the federal 2020 and 2021 appropriations bills, and we have not adopted those extensions. The bill also includes sort of nonconformity in one significant area, which is CARES Act provisions affecting businesses. So Congress loosened some restrictions related to net operating losses, excess business losses, and the business interest deduction. They temporarily loosened some of these provisions of the CARES Act, and the bill does not conform to that. And my colleague, Mr. Clayman, I think is going to talk about the bill now and talk specifically about how to vote. Oh, excuse me. It sounds like we're going to move the bill in amendment before we talk about the substance.
Right. Okay. You ready there, Chair?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so we have roughly about 80 minutes, and we want to take the vote about 2:25. And so next on the agenda, we have House File 31 from Chair Gomez, and it's the conformity that you're hearing about. Due to the time frame, the Department of Revenue has asked that we move this up, as Chair Gomez has stated. So Chair Gomez moves that House File 31 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Chair Gomez, would you like to present your bill? Or get it into the form that you would like to present.
Yeah, let's do our many amendments first.
Please. Okay, on page 17, no, just kidding. We have House File 31, Author's Amendment, DE2, A6 Amendment. I will move that the DE2, A6 Amendment to put the bill in the form that the author wants.
A06.
Does anyone have any? Everyone have the amendment on page whatever?
six, right?
Yep, AO6.
Oh, did he say?
Yeah.
AO6.
We should get a picture of the record here. Okay.
Chair Gomez, can you tell us briefly what the amendment does?
Well, the DE2 just puts the overall bill in the form that it needs to be. There were some, you know, we introduced the the House File 31 sort of pulled to place and had to do some changes to it. But.
Okay. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Davids.
I would like to speak in favor of the amendment.
Okay. Anyone else? I'll take the motion. All in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The amendment is adopted. Okay, I understand that there is another amendment. Let's see if I say this one right. DE2A6. Where are we at now?
There's an amendment.
That's only.
A04.
Yep, it's A04. It's an amendment.
We got half the alphabet and all the letters. Would you like to move that, Chair Gomez?
Yes, please.
Okay. Everyone has the amendment. Can you please briefly describe that one?
So this amendment actually removes the excess business loss provisions, which were in the in-house file 31 and in the DE2, based on conversations that Representative Davids and I had. So it gets kind of takes some provisions out that don't apply until tax year 2026, but that I hope we can take up in the future.
Thank you. Is there any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I'd just like to thank Chair Gomez for working with us on this. I think it hopefully makes it a bill that everyone can support. I think it probably will.
Thank you, and I do appreciate you guys working together in collaboration to get this bill where it is. That's exactly what we need to do. All right, any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and it is adopted. We have before us House File 31. Chair Gomez, please tell us about your bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I do want to invite nonpartisan staff probably back up to finish what was started. Or you do it from there. Okay, sorry. Again, we're figuring out the mechanics of the room. Okay, so they're going to stay up there. I'm not going to call anybody anywhere. How about that? Yeah, so, you know, they're going to kind of walk us through what's in the bill. I just wanted to say a few things up front, you know, some of which I said before. But first, I do appreciate the conversations that Representative Davids and I have been able to have yesterday, but over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, thank him for his partnership on this. I think it's really, you know, this is the sort of tax policy that whether you're a Democrat or a Republican tax chair, that you move this kind of policy because it's good for our taxpayers. It's good for our administering the tax code in a way that's as kind of legible and transparent as possible for people. And so just really appreciate that partnership in moving this forward. And I'm hopeful that, you know, that this can be something that we can just all do for our taxpayers, both here in this committee and when it moves through Ways and Means on the floor. The other thing, and I don't want to, our nonpartisan staff have been working on this just through the holiday, through Christmas and New Year's and traveling, and I just really, you know, we have just incredible staff, and we really appreciate their commitment and know that they took time out of their schedules outside of sort of the normal business hours to do this, and so really grateful to them. And then finally, you know, you heard Mr. Williams talk a little bit about you know, the substance of what's contained in the bill and what we're conforming to, and a lot of it is about, you know, the federal government's response to coronavirus, and we know that for both individuals and businesses, like, the economic impacts of that were really profound. And so, you know, in a sort of bipartisan manner, our federal government was able to function and to move aid out to people, to businesses, and to individuals. And so, you know, this is most of it, you know, in addition to the kind of business extenders is really about responding to COVID. And so, you know, it's the right thing for us to not, like, create a situation where people have to kind of introduce more and more complexity into the tax, sort of their kind of tax filing related to those things. So, yeah, I'm just thankful that we're doing this, and maybe we can turn it over to nonpartisan staff for more description.
Chair Gomez, would you like Commissioner
Chris Clavin?
Okay, Chris Clavin, please.
Mr. Chair, members, and Chair Gomez, I'm Chris Clayman. I also work with the House Research Department with my colleague, Mr. Williams. I'm going to take the first half of the conformity bill. I'm going to walk through it in a fairly general way, but I certainly don't mean to skip over any details that anyone has questions about. So if it's okay with the chair, if anyone has questions as I'm walking through this in a general way about the details, just feel free to do that. Mr. Williams talked about the fact that Minnesota is a static conformity date, and what that means in terms of legislation is what you see in sections 1, 4, 5, 18, and 19 of the bill. That's how the state anchors the state tax code to the federal Internal Revenue Code as of a certain date. So the Internal Revenue Code, in this case, as amended through December 15, 2022, is going to be the Internal Revenue Code that's going to be the starting point for state taxes. So that's just the federal update. Sections 2, 3, 14, and 17. These are mostly conforming changes to the definition of income for composite return filers, which affects the definition of income for the pass-through entity tax as well. The Section 14 is what we call the residency percentage, which determines how non-residents' income is apportioned to Minnesota if they're taxable here. Section 17 includes updates to the AMT. Essentially, whenever the legislature creates additions and subtractions, there's a question about whether conforming changes are needed to these particular sections of law. I will say that I do know that there are going to be some technical changes that need to happen in these sections with respect to the effective dates and some other provisions. So these are placeholders more than anything else right now. Section 3 is a PTE tax provision relating to how refunds are administered with respect to the credit for the pass-through entity tax, and that's there because of the change in the definition of income could affect those refunds. Section 6, 7, 15, and 16 relate to the adoption of the federal definition for earned income, which is done to opt out of some federal changes regarding shifting the tax year that you use to determine what your income is for purposes of that credit federally. And so Section 6 is where that change happens, and then 7, 15, and 16 are conforming changes. I'm going to jump ahead to – sorry I'm jumping around throughout the entire bill. If I need to slow down, just feel free to let me know. Section 26, that's a statute of limitations provision. There's a lot of retroactivity in this bill, and so potentially there could be problems with the statute of limitations having run their course. And so this provision just allows the additional time under the statute of limitations to both administer, enforce, audit, and assess tax due to some of those retroactive provisions. Lastly, before I turn it over to my colleague, Mr. Williams, sections 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13, these all relate to the provisions in the Federal CARES Act. And this was a pandemic recovery bill that included a number of tax provisions that were that affected a lot of tax provisions under federal law and state law. If the state conform to them, relating to net operating losses, excess business losses, and the business interest deduction. The CARES Act was a pandemic-related bill. These are pretty substantive provisions in terms of how they appear in the bill. I think instead of just getting too far into the details, the general idea with these provisions is because they were retroactive, the general way that these provisions work is that they are retroactive, but the way it would work is that there would be no amended returns that would be allowed or required. So in other words, the retroactive tax benefits for net operating losses, excess business losses, and business interest deductions would not be allowed. But what would happen instead is that those disallowed benefits would be allowed on a going forward basis. For business interest, there'd be a prorated 5-year schedule for taking that deduction. For net operating losses, they could be taken under the old Tax Cut and Jobs Act rules for 20 years if necessary. But the idea there is that there would be no amended returns, and so taxpayers wouldn't have to file amended returns. They just basically stay where they're at right now in terms of how those NOLs are calculated. Also, one quick note on the excess business losses. There are a number of excess business loss provisions that were modified federally. The CARES Act suspended the rules for excess business losses for tax years in 2018 through 2020. That's what these sections relate to. That's different than the excess business loss provision that was the subject of the amendment that the committee just adopted. That was not conforming to the extension of the excess business loss rules after 2026. So just wanted to make that clarification. I'm going to turn this over then to Mr. Williams, who's going to go through some of the other uncodified sections that are in this bill.
Mr. Williams.
Chair Lislegarden, members. Section 20 is a series of uncodified temporary additions and subtractions for individuals, estates, and trusts. This is essentially opting out of conformity on a number of provisions. The first five provisions on top of page 18 relate to business credits that would have sort of conformity to which would have increased tax for the affected businesses. So it's the employee retention credit, the payroll credit for required paid and sick leave, the payroll credit for required family leave, and the COBRA credit that was passed in the American Rescue Plan Act. So the bill does not conform to those changes. There's also additions. There's some other provisions that the bill is not conforming to related to the tuition deduction, 1 year of the above-the-line charitable contribution deduction, the increase in the meals expense deduction limitation, a change in the charitable contribution limit for 1 year, and that's it for individuals. And then there's Section 21 is a similar section for corporations, so it also does not conform to those COVID credits and then does not conform to the meals expense changes that I mentioned and the charitable contributions changes for corporations in 1 year. Section 22 is also an opting out of certain charitable contribution rules for 1 year. Section 23 is opting out of changes to the dependent care credit federally that were effective for tax year 21 only. Section 24 is opting out of certain special rules for casualty loss deductions related to people that were living in a declared disaster zone. And Minnesota has its own casualty loss deduction that doesn't really mesh well with those rules. So that one is not conformed to in this bill. Section 25 is a special rule for the working family credit that was based on a rule that Congress put in for the earned income credit. That expanded the pool of people that were potentially eligible to claim that credit for 1 year, and the bill is not conforming to that. And then Section 27 is just a provision related to property tax refunds. Congress allowed people to take distributions from certain retirement accounts for the purposes of dealing with kind of economic hardship due to COVID. And potentially, if we had adopted that change, some people would have seen reduced property tax refunds because they would have seen their gross income go up. And so this provision is essentially opting out of conformity to that increase in gross income and preventing people from losing property tax refunds. Section 28 is repealing a temporary conformity section that was enacted in 2021 that this act sort of subsumes elsewhere. So there's no substantive change to that repealer. And that concludes the walkthrough of the bill language.
I think next up we have Cynthia Templin.
Good afternoon. I am Cynthia Templin from the House Fiscal Analysis Department. The House Fiscal Analysis Department is also a nonpartisan office. Our office tracks the budget impacts of various proposals relative to current law. I will be going over the spreadsheet today, and I also want to bring your attention to the revenue estimate from the Minnesota Department of Revenue. So I have two documents that I'll be using today. The revenue estimate is, or excuse me, the spreadsheet that I will be discussing. Please be sure you are looking at the spreadsheet that was updated today at 12:16 p.m. And one moment, it appears that the spreadsheet still needs to be distributed, so you will have a copy of that. And on that note, there is also a revenue estimate in your packet, and the spreadsheet is based on the revenue estimate from the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
And we're just handing out the revenue estimate also. And just so everyone knows about the mics, they're not working in the room, but they're working for TV. So we're going to try to, like, project our voices so you guys can hear, but they are picking us up for other purposes.
Thank you, Representative
yes.
Gomez. Okay. For this spreadsheet, I just want to go over a couple of general pieces of information, since this is the first committee hearing and many of you have not seen a budget tracking sheet for a bill. A couple of points. The spreadsheet shows general fund tax revenue changes relative to current law. All tax revenue changes to current law affect only the state general fund. Also, any fiscal impact in parentheses indicates a revenue reduction or cost. That's a little, in taxes, our signs on the fiscal estimates are a little different from the Finance Committee, so I just want to make a note of that. And also, any positive signs on the tracking sheet indicate a revenue gain. And again, as I mentioned earlier, the tracking sheet is based on revenue estimates from the Department of Revenue. A couple of quick points about the structure of the spreadsheet. The fiscal impact of federal conformity, well, this spreadsheet reflects the total general fund fiscal impact of federal conformity for over five federal acts. And I want to just point out where you can find that information on the spreadsheet. The total general fund impact is shown on line 5 of page 1 and on the last page on line 105. And those numbers should be the same. But just to go over the total impact for the House File 31 as amended, column D shows the impact in the fiscal 24-25 biennium. The House File 31, as amended, has an estimated general fund revenue reduction of $99.780 million in the 24-25 biennium. And the impact in the fiscal 26 and 27 biennium, this biennium we often refer to the fiscal impact in the fiscal 26 and 27 biennium as the tails. The estimated general fund of revenue impact in that biennium is $3.170 million. Okay. Also, one quick point, too, on the spreadsheet. I want to point out that in federal conformity, a lot of the provisions are temporary or one time. So column A shows the effective date of each individual provision, and a lot of times the effective date also impacts the fiscal cost of a provision. So it's just important to make note of that that detail. So moving on, lines 7 through 39 show the impact of federal conformity provisions to income tax. Please note in the individual income tax section how these budget estimates in the tracking sheet affect both individual income tax filers and pass-through entities such as S corporations, sole proprietors, and partnerships. Okay, so on page one of the spreadsheet, I just thought I would go through and, well, okay, so line seven, and here I'm going to be jumping around in the spreadsheet, and I apologize for the jumping around, but I just want to highlight a couple of kind of some of the major provisions and kind of where to find subtotals in the spreadsheet for the tax reductions to the various tax types. So for individual income tax, the total tax reduction is on line 41. And for the lines, the detail above those lines, the fiscal impact of all the provisions that affect individual income tax, you can see on those lines. Lines 19 through 20, I thought I would just point out these lines because they have a larger revenue reduction or cost. This is the line from the Consolidated Appropriation Act. It is a provision that affects federal conformity to charitable contribution rules. Line 19 is a partial above the line deduction of charitable contributions. And that has a fiscal impact of $14.6 million, and it is effective for tax year 21 only. Line 20 is also a provision that affects charitable contribution rules. In addition to that, in the individual income tax side, I also want to point out that this House File 31 also has conformity to the exclusion of business loan assistance, and you can see on lines 22 and 23 the exclusion of the SBA loan assistance and the exclusion of shuttered venue grants. You can see the fiscal impact in fiscal 24 and 25. The estimated fiscal impact is $3.2 million and $3 million respectively. And you can see that, again, the cost within the budget biennium or in the budget window in fiscal 26 and 27, there's an additional cost. For those specific provisions, the business loan assistance for conformity to those provisions, I just want to point out in 2021, the tax bill did conform to the exclusion of that business loan assistance for tax year 20. House File 31 would extend the exclusion of business loan assistance to tax year 21. Turning the page to page two, lines 33 and 34, again, are additional exclusions of business loan assistance, and this is for the economic injury disaster loan advances. We refer to this as EIDL. You can see the estimated revenue reduction in fiscal 24 and 25 is $8.1 million, with a small trailing cost in the tails. This is effective for tax year 21 only. Moving on, moving down the spreadsheet, lines 44 through 67 of the spreadsheet show the budget estimates for federal conformity to provisions that affect C corporations only. You will see many of the same provisions, like for business loan assistance that you saw in income tax, but you see the fiscal impact in the spreadsheet for the C corporations in the corporate tax section. For example, the exclusion of SBA loan assistance for C corporations, the fiscal impact is shown on line 50, and it is $2.81 million in fiscal 24 and 25. With additional impact in the tails. And then moving down the spreadsheet, lines 54 through 58, my colleagues, Mr. Williams and Mr. Klayman, discussed how there are tax extenders in House File 31, and lines So lines 54 through 58 of the spreadsheet show the detail of the cost of conformity to these extenders relative to current law in the tracking sheet. One of the larger extenders in House File 31 in terms of budget impact is on line 54. It is a Consolidated Appropriations Act provision, which is the depreciation of certain residential rental property over 30 years. This has an estimated fiscal impact of $5.2 million in fiscal 24 and 25, with an additional impact in the tails. The subtotal for the budget effects to corporate taxes is shown on line 67. The remainder of the spreadsheet, line 69 through line 105, just summarize the fiscal impact of the bill by Federal Conformity Act, and it's just summary information. And that is all I have for the overview of the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Ms. Templin. Any questions from members? Representative Robinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Gomez and Ms. Templin. I did have just a question on some of the effective dates. For example, on the shuttered venue grants, which I have been a strong supporter of, and I'm glad to see that included in the bill, that's just for tax year 21, whereas the certain film, television, and live theatrical productions goes longer. And I just wondered, is the shuttered venue grant at the federal level only for that tax year? And that's why it's only 1 year, or are we making a choice here to only do it for 1 year?
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Robbins, the effective dates in House File 31 reflect the effective dates allowed in federal law. Specifically for the shuttered venue grants, that federal conformity provision was effective for tax year 20 and tax year 21. And this proposal, House File 31, includes, it only reflects tax year 21.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Templin. And I do notice that some go retroactive. So was there a reason we didn't go retroactive to 20?
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Robbins, I will have to look back at my spreadsheet and tax year 21 to see if that provision was conformed to in the tax bill in 21. Right now, I just want to make sure I give you the right information. I do have it here, but I can get back to you on that.
I do believe Mr. Williams can remake one.
Chair Lislegard and Representative Robbins, so kind of confirming what Ms. Templin said earlier, so the bill adopts these provisions and the effective dates that we in the bill, if you kind of look at the Internal Revenue Code date sections, they're all effective retroactively at the same time the provisions were effective for federal purposes. So to the extent that there was a benefit in tax year 20 or 21 from that shuttered venue provision, it would be adopted in this bill.
Thank you very much.
Representative Robbins. Any other questions? Thank you. All right, this is what I've been waiting for. Chair Gomez, I believe that there are a few folks that you have here to testify. And next up, we have Commissioner Paul Marquard. Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. It's an honor to be here. It all seems like deja vu all over again. So my name is Paul Marquardt. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Revenue and very thankful to Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan for this appointment and really looking forward to working with this committee, the legislature, and the state of Minnesota as we move things forward for the residents of Minnesota. And Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, congratulations, a huge congratulations, and congrats to all the members on the Tax Committee, and I'm looking around and seeing a number of first-termers. That's quite an honor. So congratulations. Look forward to working with all of you. And I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for hearing this bill and acting so quickly on it today. This is a major priority for Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan to get this done quickly, to get overdue tax cuts to individuals and families and businesses, and hopefully also make the filing for 2022 simpler and less costly for taxpayers. So in talking to my excellent staff here already that I've learned at the Department of Revenue, if we can get this into state law by January 13th of this year, 2023, that it will not disrupt or delay the Minnesota state filing deadlines, and that we can get going on time. So we usually open up the filing season at the same time that the IRS or the federal does. We don't know exactly what that date is going to be. Last year it was January 24th on a Monday, so we anticipate it could be closely around that time again. So if we can get this done right away by January 13th, it will be time for the Department of Revenue at that case to change the 2022 forms, tax forms. It would also allow the Department of Revenue to work with the tax preparers and get their programs updated, because you got to come back and test those to make sure all the glitches are out. It will allow them to do that and have their programs ready for when the IRS opens up their filing season. So it's very important if we can do that. Now, the way it will work for the department is that in 2022, for 2022, there would just be one filing. And you wouldn't, if we get this done in time, you wouldn't have to come back and do an amended return for 2022. The way it will work, though, for taxes 2018, 2019, you know, 20 and 21, they will have to go back and amend those returns. And there's been a couple different approaches that we've looked at to do this. But this is the one way in which the Department of Revenue can assure that people are whole, that they're getting back the tax breaks they deserve. So there was one concept of kind of a catch-up that was talked about last year when we were going through the tax bill, which you just kind of do subtractions and add all up. The problem with that is that the subtractions might not equal. The Department of Revenue met with stakeholders last year, there's a number of situations where people would not be whole. For example, there's an interaction. So there might be an income difference that, because of the catch-up, other credits that you may qualify for, you may lose out on those. And so it kind of came to the conclusion that the most effective way to get it out to taxpayers so they're getting the dollars back that they deserve is going through and amending those returns. So that's what we're looking at there. I am now on the other side of the tax committee, and I do want to inform the committee there is a cost to the department anytime you're doing these type of processes. But we have not asked for anything in this bill. But just remember, as time goes on, that there is a cost any time. You know, I never thought about that as a tax joke. You just get these bills going and move them through. So, again, I want to end by just saying it's an honor to be here as the Commissioner of Revenue and to be able to represent the state and dealing with our tax system, and getting to see all of you again and be able to work with you. And I will tell you that the governor and the lieutenant governor is very appreciative of you moving this bill quickly, getting this done so we can get overdue, much-needed tax cuts to our individuals, businesses, and families, and hopefully make this filing system a lot simpler and less costly. So with that, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I'm open for any questions.
Any questions for the commissioner?
Representative Davis.
Well, to the chair, Chair Liz Lagarde, I did promise I wouldn't bring anything up about New London Spicer in the state football championships, so I won't. With that being said, I would just like to thank Governor Walz for his appointment of former Rep. Marquardt as Commissioner of Revenue. I think that's a very, very good appointment, and this side of the aisle, and I'm sure that side of the aisle, certainly look forward to working with you as we go through the tax bill.
Anyone else? Well, I'm going to say a few things because for the people that just got elected, I had the fortune, and many of us did, to serve with Commissioner, and it's an incredible. He is extremely, as you've seen, knowledgeable, and he cares, and he treated people with dignity and respect, and it was always a pleasure to serve underneath you, and I look forward to working with you in the future. So,
thank you, Mr.
Chair. Chair, thank you. I'm excited to represent our district again on the tax, as Paul did well for us in our district, and I'm excited to be a voice for us up there, too, and look forward to working with Mark Hort, too. Thank you. Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay, so we have public testifiers. First is Paul Eager. Please come. If you could state your name and who you're with, and then speak loud enough where everyone can hear.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Egger. I'm Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. And we are a statewide business trade association with about 21,000 members who work with buyers and sellers of all types of real property around the state. Just want to thank Representative Gomez for the opportunity to testify early on this federal conformity bill. We're longtime supporters of federal conformity and really appreciate that you're doing this bill early in the session. And specifically, I just want to highlight our support for one of the items in the conformity bill, and that's the provision for the exclusion of discharge of indebtedness on a qualified principal residence, which is a mouthful, and we refer to it as the mortgage debt cancellation tax relief provision. And mortgage debt cancellation tax relief provides struggling homeowners who've had some portion of their mortgage debt forgiven by a lender through a short sale, foreclosure, or a principal reduction, relief from having that forgiven debt treated as income and taxed. Minnesota Realtors, just as long as I'm here and well under my 2 minutes, we also don't believe that as a general policy we should continue to tax this type of forgiven debt. So we'd hope that you'd consider in a future tax bill just putting a provision in Minnesota tax code that would never tax that forgiven debt. These are people that are generally facing tough economic circumstances, and it just doesn't make sense to us from a public policy perspective that we would ever want to tax somebody in that situation. So thank you for bringing the bill forward, and we definitely support moving it on at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Beth Cadoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Beth Cadoon. I suppose this isn't working. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We're an organization of about 6,300 businesses across the state of Minnesota in all industries and basically all sizes, from those small ma-and-pa shops all the way up to the Fortune 500. About 80% of our membership are those with 100 employees or less, so really represent the small businesses as well. I'd like to thank the Chair for making federal conformity a priority. This is really about, I think, a key issue for the committee as well, is to make sure that our tax system can be maintained, to make sure our compliance costs are reduced and we reduce complexity, confusion, and all that is related to federal conformity. That doesn't mean that you adopt every federal conformity provision. We still think you need to look at it through the lens of, is it good for Minnesota? Is it good for Minnesota taxpayers? And is it going to improve our business tax climate? So, specifically, I'd like to thank the Chair for including some key provisions related to federal assistance that was provided to really those hard-hit industries with the restaurant grants, hospitality, venue, for that federal assistance that was provided to make sure it's not taxed in Minnesota. So thank you for including those. And I would just urge early passage, because as was mentioned by the Commissioner, that's certainly critical to make sure that is done early so taxpayers are certain of their tax liabilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Eric Bernstein.
Apologies while I read from my computer. My printer got stuck in the snow. Chair Gomez and members of the House Taxes Committee, my name is Eric Bernstein, and I represent We Make Minnesota, which is a coalition of labor and community groups united in recognition of the essential role that our state revenues play in supporting a healthy and prosperous Minnesota. Our members include the teachers, nurses, laborers, state and local employees, and care workers that keep Minnesota running. As Minnesotans, we depend on them to build our roads, get our kids to school, handle the state's administrative business, and to care for the sick, elderly, and disabled. And they all depend on you, the state, and specifically the tax committee, for adequate funding. I'm happy to be here today on the committee's first meeting of 2023 to share our coalition's support for HF 31, which is a sensible and timely conformity bill. We think it's a great start and want to share our appreciation for Chair Gomez's leadership and for the bipartisan effort. In particular, our coalition appreciates the proposal to conform to federal provisions that exclude student loan forgiveness from taxation. This is analogous to many other conformity items which exempt businesses from tax liabilities associated with income from the numerous grant and forgivable loan programs that have passed since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. Student loan borrowers should receive the same consideration, and Minnesota should welcome any federal action that eases the crushing burden of student debt. Ensuring that this relief is not taxed at the state level is the bare minimum we can do. Passing conformity now will also help ensure a smooth filing season. This should send a positive message to all Minnesota taxpayers that this committee takes their tax filing experience seriously and that the state will competently discharge its responsibility to manage the state's fiscal business. On that note, our coalition would also like to suggest that there is much more we can do and should do to ease tax filing burdens for all Minnesotans. Currently, 90% of Minnesota filers complete their taxes online, most of them using private sector tools like TurboTax. These commercial products are convenient and user-friendly, but charge fees ranging from $500 to several hundred dollars. Filing fees are equivalent to an additional tax burden that should be instead borne by the state. And to echo Commissioner Marquardt's excellent point, the DOR would need revenue to make that happen. Just something to consider. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Mr. Fragnino.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Gino Fragnino, and I'm the Government Relations Director at the Minnesota CPA Society. We're a professional association of about 8,000 CPAs around Minnesota. About half of our members are practicing in public accounting firms, and the other half are working at companies around the state and in your districts. And the society would like to thank the chair for bringing this bill soon and early. It's makes the complexity and the compliance burden a lot simpler. It reduces the amount of time and effort that the taxpayer needs to put into their return working with their preparer. We also appreciate the department's position on wanting to work this fast and having the taxpayer software providers actually be able to test this. And I will say that when we had the last tax bill pass in July of 2021, it took approximately 2 months before the software had caught up. So thinking about that, there may be some delays there as well. And with over 50 provisions in this bill, there is a lot of complexity that we will reduce and provide some ease of filing for the individuals. I would like to call a couple of items to your attention. And looking at the requirement in the bill right now that the returns be filed, that amended returns be filed, and looking back, if we have 4 years of amended returns, 18, 19, 20, and 21, there is the potential, as the commissioner said, the intent is to make people whole. But if you look at filing amended returns for 4 consecutive years, that does not come without a cost. And so if you look at, I'm going to pick an average of 500, that number was presented by the previous testifier, up to $1,000. When I look at an adjustment that would be needed on a particular year, if you were in the 10% tax bracket, you're looking at about a $7,000 adjustment before you would even break even in filing that amended return. So you have to decide, is it worth filing an amended return, or do you want to keep it as it is? So I would draw that to your attention. And finally, would like to draw to your attention the current requirement that these amended returns be filed in 6 months. I would respectfully ask that the committee consider perhaps a 12/31 end date, and have mentioned this to the commissioner as well. Just looking at where we're at in this year and with the amount of changes that are coming, some additional time may be beneficial to the preparers and the software providers to be able to make sure everything's right and make sure that this moves through the process as smoothly as possible. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next, we have Andy Wilkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Andy Wilkie. I am the Director of Business Development and Public Affairs at Greater Mankato Growth, the Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development organization serving 900 members in the Greater Mankato area. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Greater Mankato is a growing, dynamic, and vibrant Greater Minnesota metro hub with a very large trade area. We attract a workforce from an area that includes 22 counties in southern Minnesota. A couple of highlights. We have the highest rates of retail spending per capita, more than all other Minnesota metros. We are home to more than 25,000 college students in 5 colleges and universities, and agriculture is the core of our economy. We are the green seam. More soybeans are processed in Mankato than any other city in North America. Not to mention, we have the lowest unemployment rate in the nation. To the tax bill before us, I want to draw your attention to one specific provision that relates to the SBA, Restaurant Revitalization Fund grants. This is a federal program similar to the Paycheck Protection Program, but unique to restaurants. In Minnesota, the program helped 1,718 businesses. There were dozens of businesses in Greater Mankato receiving support through this program. One in particular is Wow Zone, a family entertainment center that opened in 2008 by Doug and Pam DeMars. It has 24 bowling lanes, laser tag, mini golf, arcade. What's not to love about a place with a name like Wow Zone? Doug and Pam received a restaurant revitalization grant. This was a lifeline and an important tool to keep their business afloat. As mentioned before, their restaurant revitalization is similar to the PPP. The funds received increased their state tax liability due to the state law not being in conformance with federal law. Pam and Doug, along with hundreds of restaurant owners across the state, just want to move on and focus on what they do best, serving their customers and their community. On behalf of Doug, Pam, and dozens of restaurants in Mankato, I urge you to support the SBA our restaurant revitalization conformity contained in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to testify before the committee? Seeing none, member discussion. Gosh, this is good.
Mr. Chair,
Oh. It's
not going to be that good. It's not going to be that good.
Representative Davids.
I'm referring back to what Mr. Fragnito with the CPA said, and maybe, I don't know if Ms. Bears or somebody could come down. Are we going to be deluging the Department of Revenue if everything has to be done within 6 months, or would it be better to spread that out over a year? I don't know who'd maybe want to.
Ms. Bears?
Or Commissioner?
Oh, we got the Commissioner. Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative David. So we could extend that to a year. I mean, the department is fine. 6 months was set up, and in talking with Mr. Fragnito today, it sounds like 6 months might not be enough time.
Yeah.
So certainly it could go a year. I don't think there's any set date on that. So, I mean, at some point we could make that, Chair, if that was okay with the House and the Senate. And one other point I want to make as we look at this is that the department has already been looking at changing forms and that. So they're not waiting until this gets into law. I mean, if this gets into law, a lot of work. They've been already looking at this for months. And I know the chairs have been looking at this for months already. So the department, you know, if it happens, is ready to go on some of those things. But so we...
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And as we go forward, I mean, vote this thing out here today, but maybe in Ways and Means, Mr. Fragnito could have his people talking to Commissioner Marquardt's people, and it seems reasonable to me to go 2 years, but I'm not, don't want to mess this up as far as this goes at this point.
Thank you. Representative Anderson?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would encourage and support a longer term than 6 months. I'm a business owner, and I've had to file amendments numerous times. And this is the same. It's a huge amount of work for the CPA firms. In 6 months is very unrealistic, I think, on both sides. So, thanks.
Any other questions or comments? Mm-hmm. Closing comments, Chair Gomez.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Definitely, you know, we have to make another stop with this bill in Ways and Means, so let's talk about changing the date. I don't see any reason why we wouldn't. So thanks for that. Yeah, just my thanks and gratitude to everybody who's worked on this. I know that a lot of people have spent a lot of time and energy. I'm looking over at our friends at the Department of Revenue, and in addition to our nonpartisan and partisan researchers and all the members. So just thank you very much.
Okay, Chair Gomez renews her amended to be referred to Ways and Means. Oh, motion, House File 31, as amended, be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Hey, this is opening day. Let's take the vote. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Oppose? Motion carries. Okay, so I think that, is there anything else to come before the body? I will tell you, I asked for grace, and as we get running in person, I told somebody, a group the other day, that I haven't chaired a board in 4 years since I was a mayor. So getting back in the saddle, all of us, this is exciting. We're doing good work, and I look forward to more successes, both Democrats and Republicans working together. And thank you. Meeting adjourned.